Good afternoon, everyone. Very excited to be with you here in Steamboat Springs. First time for Terry and I. We have almost our entire family with us, so two infants and a slew of us, 10. Then I've got my nephew Scott and his wife Lauren from Oregon. We've got a lot of Buchanans here, so we don't outnumber you, but we're glad to join you. You know, I've pretty much figured out we're usually used to seaside accommodations for the Feast of Tabernacles, but I've pretty much figured out that if I do anything particularly stupid or mean-spirited during the feast, I can write it off to high altitude. I think that's maybe a carte blanche for all of us. Whatever we do can be written off to altitude sickness. In fact, when we landed at the Denver airport, and this particular story has become our festival story so far for the current year. We were assigned a vehicle in this massive parking lot in space 411. 411, this mammoth Hertz parking lot. And we looked for this vehicle. We could not find 411. But then I noticed an attendant. And I politely suggested to the rest of the family, perhaps we should encounter this gentleman and inquire as to whether there is a space 411 and where that space might be. To which my son-in-law, Jared, came upon the attendant and said, "Hey, where's 411? Jared, high altitude. Altitude sickness. That's what it was. A few moments down the road as we're heading from the airport, out from the far reaches of the back seat of this mammoth-sized vehicle came the voice of our 9-year-old granddaughter who said, "Hey, where's 411? And so it has begun. If you meet my son Jared Knights, ask him where's 411. It seems that Darwin was right, after all. You remember Charles Darwin? Darwin was right. But not about his theory of evolution, of which, if it were cheese, it would be Swiss because it has so many holes in it. Darwin wrote a book called The Origin of Species, where he talked about evolution, as we remember. But, an interesting fact, Darwin is credited as the father of evolution. His name leaps off the lips of everyone when they think about the theory of evolution. But he wasn't the originator of the idea at all. It had been floating around in philosophic circles for over 200 years prior to his birth. But he indeed is credited as being the father of the theory of evolution. He wrote The Origin of Species in 1859. Is there anything available in our modern society today that was thought of as scientific that still holds water, that it was published in the 19th century? Very few things. But actually, the origin of evolution is traced back to an ancient Greek philosopher. Epicurus is the one that first came up, apparently, with the idea. But I said Darwin was right. And he followed up his Origin of the Species in a book, 1871, titled The Descent of Man. And in this work, I'll quote from Charles Darwin. He said, "As many more individuals of each species are born that can possibly survive, and as consequently there is a frequently recurring struggle for existence, it follows that any being, if it vary, however slightly in any manner profitable to itself under the complex and sometimes varying conditions of life, will have a better chance of surviving and thus be naturally selected. From the strong principle of inheritance and the selected variety will tend to propagate its new and modified form." Let me break that down into fewer words so that you can actually understand it. Survival of the fittest. Darwin was the one that suggested in his book that the strong survive and live to breed more like themselves. Now, taken upon itself and applied to the animal kingdom, I suppose we could all ignore it. But Darwin used the survival of the fittest and suggested that since the strong survive, in The Descent of Man, decades after his book was published, that particular theory of survival of the fittest was applied to human beings. Now, the theory of evolution has become very persuasive, very outdated science, but perhaps even more pernicious is his idea of survival to the fittest for the next 160 years of human experience after his eugenic ideas were presented to the world. There's a science called eugenics. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before, but eugenics was the science of improving a human population by controlling breeding to increase the occurrence of desirable heritable characteristics. It was developed largely by Francis Galton. Francis Galton was the cousin of Charles Darwin. Francis Galton suggested eugenics, or the science of improving human beings through better breeding, to improve the human race. 6 years after he published an article, his cousin wrote about that particular science in his book, and so we are left with survival of the fittest. Now, I know that you don't pay attention to those ideas, and I don't lay awake at night thinking of these things or thinking of these ideas, and you might be thinking, well, they're just ideas, right? Were they only significant to a small group of people reading the books of the day in the 19th century? Or have they had a much greater impact on the history of mankind? From the book entitled, I like this title, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, the author Benjamin Wicker quotes a Scottish writer by the name of Thomas Carlyle, who at one time was scolded at a dinner party for talking about the famous books of the day. A lady told him, "These are ideas, Mr. Carlyle, just ideas." And he shot back to her, "There was once a man called Rousseau who wrote a book containing nothing but ideas. The second edition was bound in the skins of those who laughed at the first. It was the ideas of Rousseau that inspired one of the bloodiest revolutions in political history, the French Revolution of the late 18th century." Many of you know that last year the Christian world celebrated the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. The Protestant Reformation has been hailed as one of the greatest events of human history, but the Protestant Reformation brought about almost no great theological consequence that changed human behavior whatsoever. I submit to you that as a Reformation, it was basically worthless as a movement because it changed nothing about the way human beings lived. Nothing, at least, that was reflective of the life of Jesus Christ. And so today, the Bible remains the book, as Bruce Barton once wrote, the book that nobody knows. Now, Christianity and its mainstream attempt certainly has had some impact in changing the lives. I think that we can all agree with that. But since the beginning of the printing press, there have been a number of authors who have had a profound effect on the events of mankind. You've heard of their names: Machiavelli, Hobbes, Descartes, Rousseau, Marx, Engels, Mill, Darwin, Nietzsche, Lenin, Hitler, Sanger, Freud, Kinsey, Friedman, to quote some more modern authors. For the past 500 years, many of these authors and others and their ideas have been promulgated with an unholy message that has influenced the minds and the thoughts of men who have turned their ideas, nothing but ideas, Mr. Carlyle, who have turned their ideas into action. What kind of action? Well, when these ideas, which were taught throughout the 19th and 20th century in all schools and universities and absorbed by the minds of mankind, when they began to germinate and amalgamate together, mankind took himself almost to the brink of extinction in the 20th century. And he surely would have gone there had he had the better means for doing so. And although it wasn't the only aspect of men's philosophies, survival of the fittest as a philosophy first fomented into the action of World War I, resulting in 37 million deaths in World War I. It's estimated that over 80 million died a generation later in World War II. Communism, in its various iterations and overthrows, was responsible for over 94 million deaths in the 20th century. And in this nation, over 60 million lives and counting have been systematically jettisoned since the fateful decision in 1972 of Roe versus Wade. There was an author by the name of Margaret Sanger. Have you ever heard of Margaret Sanger? Ironically, she's called the mother of birth control, which is really illogical when you think about it, but that's what she's called. She wrote a book. She was a liberal proponent of eugenics, which was first theorized as a way to bring mankind to a higher state several generations later. But she became a huge proponent of eugenics, selective breeding, whereby the imbecilic and the weak of society would be forced to undergo sterilization so that they would not breed more of themselves on the planet. She was also the one who is responsible for Planned Parenthood in its present form, which is basically, as many people know, simply abortion mills that are scattered throughout the United States. The number of deaths that have accumulated since the Roe versus Wade decision to legalize, nationally legalize abortion, is bigger than the combined population of Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Virginia, North and South Carolina, and Georgia. Margaret Sanger wrote The Pivot of Civilization, the forced sterilization of certain segments of the population, basically described by individuals like her, would have to undergo forced sterilization. Survival of the fittest. Competition. Well, today's the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Let's talk about something a little bit brighter than that. I'd like to remind you of the ideas and the actions that will change the world that we live in. That is the title today, the actions, the ideas and the actions that will change the world. Now, there's really very little doubt that the authors I've cited have had a profound and pernicious impact on the affairs of mankind, and they'd had greater impact had it not been for one thing. Please turn to the book of Micah, chapter 5, verses 7 through 9. Water is the antidote for saying something particularly stupid, so I need to guzzle down some. Had it not been for the blessings bestowed upon Abraham, the world would be in a lot worse spot than it is today. It says, then the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many peoples, like dew from the Lord, like showers of the grass, that wait for no man, nor wait for the sons of men. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many peoples, like a lion among the beasts of the forest, like a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who, if he passes through, both treads down and tears in pieces, and none can deliver. Your hand shall be lifted up against your adversaries, and all your enemies shall be cut off. That prophecy has come to pass, because at the beginning of the 19th century, Great Britain and the United States began to dominate the world scene, and do so today as well. They held in check the power of the vain philosophies of men, communism, Marxism, socialism, as well as the nations that had become enslaved with those ideas, and certainly those ideas have enslaved many of our peoples, and even the descendants of Abraham. And there's very little doubt that the Bible, which held up the rights of the individual, gave law to a world that would protect a society and became a powerful influence in these two nations. And though the ideas and the philosophies of the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th century have wreaked havoc upon mankind, it has been the modern descendants of Israel who overthrew and rescued man from the savagery that would have happened, it would have been on a much larger scale. The savagery of Darwinism, socialism, Marxism, communism, fascism, among all the other wrong concepts and ideas that have nearly throttled the life out of the world. It's incredible what we have all lived through. Now, when you examine the lives of these dominant philosophers and the ideas that sprang from them, there is a common theme of those that I have mentioned. None of them believed in God. In fact, most of them hated the idea of a God with rules and regulations, because all of these individuals hated law. They hated absolutes, and they came up with their own theories to replace the law of God. In Proverbs 29 and verse 18, it says, "Where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint, but happy is he who keeps the law." We are here to keep the law of God. And I submit to you that by your obedience to the law of God during the Feast of Tabernacles or at any point in your lives, you automatically make the lives of people around you, even if you don't come into personal contact with them, better. And I was listening with great interest to Mr. Antion's fine introduction to the Feast of Tabernacles last night. He's mentioning about the influence that we have had in times past when we'd have thousands of peoples at a feast site. We still have a profound impact and influence on people because we are law keepers and law abiders, and we have a great impact. You'll have a great impact on this small city, you bet you will, this coming week. But these individuals rejected God, they rejected the Bible, they rejected revelation, and all the philosophies of man lead to self-determination. We decide for ourselves what is appropriate, what is right, what is wrong. Turn to the book of Isaiah, chapter 14, verse 3. We begin to examine, and on the Day of Atonement, we examined where these false ideologies and isms come from. How did man come to these ideas? It certainly wasn't on his own. We learn through the Day of Atonement that they came from someplace. This satanic being is labeled the king of Babylon in Isaiah 14. "It shall come to pass in the day that the Lord gives you rest from your sorrow and from your fear and the hard bondage in which you were made to serve, that you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon." After Jesus' return, this proverb will come to pass. "How the oppressor has ceased, the golden city ceased. The Lord has broken the staff of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers, he who struck the people in wrath with a continual stroke." How did he do that? It was through ideas, the ideas of men that turned into action. "Who ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and no one hinders. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer," verse 12. "How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations." The ideas that sprang from the mind of this being weakened the nations. Verse 17, "Who made the world as a wilderness and destroyed its cities, who did not open the house of his prisoners." Years ago, Mr. Armstrong wrote a book, "A World Held Captive." And it has been. Indeed, it has been held captive. Christ said to some in John 8 and verse 44, that their lives reflected the life of this being. He said, "You're of your father the devil, who and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks for his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." And the world that we live in today, that we grow accustomed to, and we really do. We were, for instance, checking into a house here in Steamboat Springs, and the realtor that was checking us in told us that there is a neighborhood bear. He's just a cub. He only weighs 100, maybe 200 pounds by now, but he's tried to break into the house several times, and we're all paranoid about a bear coming into the house now. But we've seen the windows. We've seen the claw marks and the bite marks that prove that actually there is a bear roaming around in the neighborhood, and although he doesn't appear to be too aggressive, I don't think any of us wants to take the chance. We'll see a lot of these animals out in the wilderness here, and they're beautiful, but they can also be very powerful and very dangerous to human beings. And this world that we live in is saturated. The mind of man has been saturated. The minds of beasts have been saturated with the spirit of murder. It's influenced by the God of this world. Now, we're imagining, we're looking forward to a time in which that influence is removed and there won't be this spirit of murder any longer. Note Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. When the pages stop flipping, that's our cue to begin. No. Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers. A hallmark of virtually all of the philosophers that I've mentioned, especially sexual immorality, an idea that they all held dear to themselves, that they should be able to do anything with anyone at any time that they wish. This Rousseau guy, this great French philosopher, oh boy, what a prince this guy was. He was amazing. He fathered 5 children. But immediately upon their birth, they were dropped off at the National Adoption Hall in France. He never had any contact with any of his children ever from the moment of their birth. Children were viewed as an inconvenience. Now, if you were to examine the lives of any of these ninnies and to see how they actually conducted themselves, probably no one would ever want to follow their insanity. And yet the world is captivated by them. Mark 7 in verse 20, Christ said that what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness. And it's a perfect description of the world in which we live, that we're subject to as well. And we grow up, we're accustomed to it, we're born into this world. It is the natural state of the world that we live in. It's held captive by false ideologies and a spirit of competition, a survival of the fittest, in which those who survive are oftentimes the most cunning and the most deceitful. And that is the spirit of the world that we live in. And it would be the prevailing spirit of all nations had it not been for the blessings bestowed upon Abraham and his descendants, who've kind of kept the world in check despite all of these falsehoods, these ideas that have damaged the world, that have made its prisoners to their ideas. These individuals who are motivated by these false ideologies are often the wicked who survive, the wicked who are able to continue in this race of mankind, the struggle. They're the ones without the knowledge of God, his law, and they will conceive any way possible to deprive others. It's infiltrated in our society today. You can see examples of it all the time. Jesus, in his first coming, if you'll turn to 1 John chapter 3 and verse 15, one of his closest friends on this earth was the Apostle John. And in his first coming, Jesus expanded the concept of law. And for you and I today, we know that that applies and has a hold on us. Whoever hates his brother, John said, is a murderer. You know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. So today, we begin a quest, 7 days for the Feast of Tabernacles, in which we celebrate the fact that not only will the spirit of murder be removed and put away and held captive for 1,000 years, but the spirit of hate as well. Can you imagine living in a world in which there is no spirit of hate, no animosity. I would say it's probably very difficult for us to imagine that. But Mr. Antion said something profound last night, that we're here to put into action these ideas of which we learn about. We're here to put them into action, and we ourselves can be the forerunners of the time in which there is no hate in mankind. Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 12. We can see many examples in which hate turns into action. Actions are often very destructive in many of our cities today, throughout our nation and throughout the world. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 12, it says, "Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not the Lord of hosts that the peoples labor to feed the fire, and the nations weary themselves in vain?" Aha, but the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters covering the sea. So we're here today anticipating in this entire week the beginning of this incredible prophecy that shows that no longer will there be the wholesale rejection of God's law and his knowledge. And all of you, and myself included, have been invited to share that knowledge and to bring it about. And the powerful influences on mankind will no longer be Mao, Stalin, Hitler, Sanger, Freud, or any of this world's great thinkers, so-called. It's going to be the ideas of Jesus Christ, Moses, James, Peter, John, and you. And you, all of you, are going to be the ones. Our nations, our cities, or towns are going to be safer, a lot safer, as a result of this change. Turn to Isaiah 11 and chapter in verse 6. Isaiah 11 and verse 6. Got a nice little teddy up here. Going to give a few of these away to the little kids in a few days. Nice cuddly thing. They're not cuddly out in the wild right now. They're not cuddly. You need to stay away from them. You can have this guy, but you're going to stay away from all those other dangerous animals. But we're looking forward to a time in which the nature of the beasts of the field will be changed. And that'll be profound enough, but the other thing that will be significant is the attitude of man will also be changed. The wolf also will dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. I've got some little children with me this year at the feast, grandchildren. Now, they may grow up into their adult lives before Jesus Christ returns, but I think about them and I think about their ability and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, generations to come, who will be able to play with these wild beasts of the field because they won't be infected with spirit of competition and survival of the fittest. You see, Darwin was right, and it applies to the animal kingdom. The strong do survive out in the wild. The murderous intent of animals and the murderous intent of human beings is going to go away. The cow and the bear shall graze, and their young ones shall lie down together, and a lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play by the cobra's hole, and a weaned child shall put his hand in the viper's den. One of our members who's visiting here from Tucson told me a few weeks ago, we were talking about, I can't remember what the context of our conversation was. We were talking about snakes, and apparently, this is according to Sheila, not to me, so I'm just quoting Sheila. There are about four varieties of poisonous snakes in the United States, and we have a lot fewer than some places of the world where they have 20 or 30 different types of poisonous snakes. A cobra is pretty poisonous, at least I've heard. Isn't it going to be amazing when a child can play near wild animals like this? They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Now, let's go back to the book of Genesis in chapter 2. There's something I find very interesting here. That God created Adam, He says there's no helper amongst the rest of the creation which he developed that was suitable for Adam as a mate. But it says in verse 19 of Genesis 2, out of the ground the Lord formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air, and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name. So Adam gave names to the cattle, to the birds of the air, to every beast of the field. But for Adam, there is not found a helper comparable to him. Now, there is no indication in the Garden of Eden that there is any predatory nature of animals or beings at all. Adam seemed to have been close enough to look at them, to be able to form in his own mind a name for these animals. So I would submit that there doesn't seem to be at this particular time any sense of fear as these animals were brought to Adam. We're not told the exact story, but I guess my theory is that when Adam and Eve were banished from the Garden of Eden, that the curse that occurred in Genesis 3 as a result of their banishment also engulfed the animal realm as well. I don't know, and there's no way to prove it either way, I suppose, but I would just say that since that nature is going to be changed back at some point in the future after Jesus Christ's return, that from the beginning, this survival of the fittest attitude and this spirit of murder that has infected animals and human beings simply did not exist at that particular time. The predatory nature of man has been a part of his entire history. I'm not going to read from Genesis 10. It gives us, though, the briefest accounts of the first dictator after the flood, was over. Nimrod is mentioned. He's called a mighty hunter. Other translations say that he was a mighty hunter of men. And he was the world's first dictator, or the first ruler that had other men serving him. And according to ancient Sumerian accounts, Nimrod was a tyrant who declared to the people of his day that he would avenge the deaths of their ancestors by destroying God. And so he built Babel as a monument to his achievements. And I think he even convinced a lot of people that he had killed God. There was a famous German psychoanalyst, scientist, philosopher, Nietzsche, who said, God is dead. And when he died, somebody wrote, Nietzsche is dead, God. For 1,000 years, the thoughts and the ideas of man are going to be in change. They'll be changed. They'll be inspired, not by the God of this world, as mentioned in Ephesians 2 and verse 2, which enslaved all the thoughts of mankind, but it will be Jesus Christ and his followers who will broadcast the right things. Now, an interesting Bible study I'll just cite for you. If you want to fast forward, it's a little bit out of context. Ezekiel chapter 38, verses 10 through 23, if you want to look at that later. Ezekiel 38, verses 10 through 23 show that at the end of the 1,000 years, wrong thoughts are once again going to be broadcast. And we know what happens at the end of the millennium when Satan is released for a little season. And some of the earth's population will be again subject to those wrong ideas. The ideas of spirit and murder and competition and survival of the fittest. Now turn with me to Amos chapter 9. Amos chapter 9 and verse 13. And we often think about these millennial prophecies, and they're beautiful, and they show an abundance of virtually every aspect of life. And especially we can focus in, and we kind of tend to do that because we are material individuals ourselves, we tend to focus on the material wealth that mankind will have access to. That's not going to be what changes society. It's going to be a nice adjunct to what happens. But Isaiah chapter 9, verse 13 says, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when the plowman shall overtake the reaper. There'll still be produce in the field when it's time to plow again. There's just so much of it. And the treader of grapes, him who sows seed. So the curse of the garden, or the curse that was instilled upon the race of man and all of mankind after the Garden of Eden will be removed, and there will be an abundance of material wealth. It'll be so great and so abundant that it will be difficult to harvest it all. There's so much of it, and the wine is pressed so quickly after the vines are planted. Everything is just going to grow and grow and grow. The mountains shall drip with sweet wine, and the hills shall flow with it. I will bring back the captives of my people Israel, and they shall build the waste cities and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and drink wine from them. They shall also make gardens and eat fruit from them. And I will plant them in their land, and no longer shall they be pulled up from the land I have given them, says the Lord your God. People are going to be unafraid. It does pay to be afraid sometimes in the society in which we live. Sometimes having a certain amount of fear can save your life, right? In the world in which we live, in the world tomorrow, that is all banished because the evil thoughts of men are going to be changed. They're going to be inspired by the Spirit of God rather than the spirit of this world. People will be productive. They will be happy. It will be incredible. It's unbelievable to look at this and look forward to it. And many of us have rehearsed and read about this incredible increase in production for many years. This kind of prosperity is echoed in many millennial prophecies. Turn with me to Micah chapter 4 and verse 1. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain, that is the government, of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains. God's government over all, and shall be exalted above the hills, smaller principalities and nations, and the people shall flow to it. And many nations shall come and say, come and let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. The ideas of God will be translated into action. Actions that will benefit everybody around them. For out of Zion the law shall go forth, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge between many peoples and rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. In verse 4, everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree. And no one shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. For all people walk in the name of his God, but we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. There will be abundance in the world tomorrow, but that abundant life, that abundant material wealth would be meaningless. Because let's face it, in the Western world, the poorest individual of the Western world and the civilized nations is far better off, materially speaking, than most of humanity who has ever lived. And so they've had, and we have, abundance. But we don't have peace because we have the wrong ideas, the wrong ideologies, the wrong thoughts that have been motivated into the wrong actions. And that's why sometimes people are afraid to walk in the cities in which they grew up, especially at nighttime. Because there is a spirit of murder, there is a spirit of competition, there is a spirit of hostility that makes us afraid. With the rule of Jesus Christ and all of its abundance and all the wealth, God is going to supernaturally change the nations because the thoughts that turn into actions are going to be inspired by him. He'll also supernaturally change the nature of animals. Without that change, the material blessings would be meaningless. It would just be survival of the fittest still, but with just greater materialism. Now, for the record, year or two into the thousand-year reign of Jesus Christ, I guess I'm probably not going to be an advocate for a mass book burning, so to speak, of all of these vain philosophies. Certainly the world would have been a lot better without a lot of these ideas that have been promulgated. But I think that individuals who grow up in a different society are going to find these isms: socialism, communism, Marxism, or the writers and the authors of those vain ideas and philosophies of men, Lenin and Marx and Hitler and Sanger and Freud and all the rest. They're going to find them very curious indeed. How did these ideas survive? How did they see the light of day? How did they see a printing press? How was this allowed? How could man have been persuaded that God is dead? How could this have happened? And they'll be taught how it happened. I'm sure of that. But people will be, I'm sure, struck by the fact that the strange philosophies captured the minds of men for 6,000 years. Brethren, the ideas and the actions that are going to change the world have been made available to all of us. All of us who hope to be a part of what is called the first resurrection, which means you get to help inspire others with these right ideas and these right concepts and help those become the actions of mankind. The ideas and the actions that will transform the world are sitting right on your laps. Well, let them inspire you during this Feast of Tabernacles. Very happy to be here to share these times with you. And let's make it a great Feast of Tabernacles by turning these ideas now into actions for all of those around us.